Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. Issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You may have heard the news about a European Human Rights Court making a decision that forbids the display of crucifixes in the public schools of Italy. You may not even know that crucifixes were there, but apparently they were, and the court says they need to come down. There is a secularization of the state issue. I think that's the term that they use. Secularism of the state. Joining us to talk about this decision, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. He's professor emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's distinguished professor of philosophy and Christian thought at Patrick Henry College and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ, Our Advocate. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back.
It's always a pleasure.
Was this decision a good one or a bad one from a legal standpoint?
It was certainly a good one. And the fascinating thing about this is that the reaction in Italy to this is very much the same as the reaction of fundamentalists and many evangelicals when prayer was prohibited in the public schools in the United States.
So you take that to be a good decision as well?
Oh, yes. Of course, if there is a separation of church and state, as there is in the United States, and as occurred in Italy in 1948, then one cannot give an advantage to any one religious belief in public institutions. I mean, after all, everyone has to pay taxes, and one should not have to pay for a religious position that one doesn't hold personally. It simply isn't right that somebody who in Italy doesn't go along with the Roman Catholic Church or with a very conservative form of Christian religion would have to send his or her child to school, and the child is faced with a crucifix in every classroom.
The Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, says this is one of those decisions that often make us doubt Europe's common sense. He wants the government to appeal the ruling. If you had 5 minutes with the Prime Minister to explain to him why this is a good decision for Italy, how would you go about it?
Well, I would try to point out to him that if one separates church and state, as in Italy now, one must not indirectly force Christian faith down the throats of people who have not committed themselves to it, that this goes contrary to the nature of Christian faith itself. Our Lord wept over Jerusalem. He said, "How often would I have gathered you as a hen gathers her chicks, but you would not." In other words, people need to make decisions as to what their religious position is. And if they feel that the government is forcing this on them, this will be counterproductive. And it's ironic that some of the leadership in Italy has made statements like that of Claudio Scajola, who said, "The crucifix is a universal symbol of love, meekness, and peace." And the Minister of Education said, "No one, not even some ideologically motivated European court, will succeed in rubbing out our identity." I mean, this is just nonsense. Interestingly enough, when the government went to the court, the government tried to argue that the crucifix was no longer primarily a religious symbol. My goodness, this is exactly like people in the United States at the time of the prayer decision trying to say, or at the time of taking the the Ten Commandments off of the walls of schools, or the creche sets out of public parks, that these things were no longer really religious. I mean, what does that accomplish for Christian faith? What we need to do is to recognize that Christian faith is a matter of personal acceptance. And, of course, these are religious symbols. And if one mixes these with government authority, one is confusing law and gospel.
Many will state, with regard to the U.S. side of this thing, that the separation of church and state isn't found in the U.S. Constitution per se. It was the musings of Thomas Jefferson. And even then, in private correspondence, has no place as a part of the institution of our government. Your response?
Well, there's no doubt about the fact that this originated with Jefferson. The wall of separation is simply in a private letter. But if you look at the First Amendment seems to make very clear that the government is not to interfere in what the church is doing and is not to establish a religious position. And if that's the case, then there certainly is a separation. The separation isn't absolute. It isn't 100%. But as the court said in dealing with the Italy situation, in a country where, as in Italy, the vast majority of people are Roman Catholic, if you allow a specifically Christian religious symbol in the classrooms, the implication is that the government is standing behind this. And when you have young children in the classroom, they are going to assume when they see this symbol that that you really need to be Catholic in order to be a true Italian. And this can't be right. I mean, if one doesn't like that kind of an approach, the answer to this is not to separate church and state. As in England, for example, where the Queen is the head of the church and the Anglican Church is the established church. Therefore, in England, there's no problem whatsoever in having Christian symbols in classrooms or having creche sets on public property. So one first of all makes a decision as to which is the better approach. And in my opinion, the better approach is that of the United States and Italy, where one creates a level playing field, a marketplace of ideas in which Christian faith and other competing options can vie with each other. And there, Christian faith will win because the Christian faith has the evidence for it and the only hope of eternal life. And that's why in the United States, for example, there are far, far stronger churches and far better evangelistic outreach than you find in England.
Steve is listening in his car. Steve, thank you for being patient. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Not a problem. I think one of the things that people don't think about is when you have a situation where you have a, quote, state church, or the church is in bed with the government and it's the official church, if you look at history, the church always becomes subservient to the political whims of the government. And how many state churches do we have that you could call theologically orthodox and conservative?
Steve, thank you very much. Dr. Montgomery, about a minute.
Yeah, that's very sound. There are very few that are orthodox in that sense. And, of course, in England, the Anglican Church, though it's not at all as liberal as the Episcopal Church in the United States, is nevertheless not as solid doctrinally as we would want it to be. If you unite the church with the state, what you do is to contaminate the church with all of the state's problems. People tend not to love government. I mean, you don't see people weeping with joy in front of the post office. And by that same token, if the church is united with the state, there are invariably problems. But in Italy, the difficulty is they want to have their cake and eat it too. You can't both have a separation of church and state and then indirectly, through crucifixes in the classroom, push a particular religious position.
Dr. Montgomery, with only a minute, Christians here in the U.S. and around the world are frustrated with the secularization of the culture and see this decision as a setback for Christianity, should they?
I don't think they should. It seems to me that we should not rely upon the state to do our evangelism for us, either directly or indirectly. If we are living in a pluralist society, which we are, and if we have a separation of church and state, which we have, this simply gives us the opportunity and the privilege to preach the gospel far more effectively through our churches and our individual personal witness than we normally do. And I think it's a cop-out and an admission that we are not willing to do this for ourselves when we complain that this isn't being done sufficiently through the operations of government.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and Christian Thought at Patrick Henry College, author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ, Our Advocate. He's also director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, held annually in Strasbourg, France. Find out more about this premier academy of Christian apologetics at our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand, issuesetc.org, click on demand. Dr. Montgomery, thank you so much for being our guest.
You're most welcome.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Robert Spencer. The tragic story of, what, a dozen or more dead at Fort Hood in Texas, killed at the hand of a Muslim soldier, a major, a psychiatrist. It's a sad story in and of itself. If you've been watching it, you might have noticed some tension, a little bit of tension in the reporting. The fact that he was a Muslim came up very early, and of course people are raising eyebrows saying, does that have anything to do with what he did? Does the fact that this man was a Muslim, did it in any way motivate him to what he did, killing many of his fellow soldiers? Well, people say, no, it can't. Why is it that it appears that the fact that this soldier, this Muslim soldier, as a Muslim soldier, is being a little bit downplayed? What should we know about Islam to rightly understand what happened in Fort Hood, Texas? Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch will be our guest. Stay tuned.
I attended Sunday services in a beautiful Singapore Lutheran congregation. One local man approached me and asked with a pronounced Southeast Asian accent, "You live in St. Louis? You know Todd Wilkin?"
Pastor Matt Harrison reading from his new audiobook, Christ Have Mercy, How to Put Your Faith in Action.
Who? You mean Todd Wilkin? It turned out this man, half a world away, was a regular listener via the internet, and he's hardly alone. It really is a whole new day. We are witnessing the greatest free flow of faithfully Lutheran information in the history of the Lutheran Church. It is the worldwide moment for confessional Lutheranism. It is Missouri's moment.
You can download Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison at cph.org. It costs only $10.99 to download. This new audiobook is a must-listen for Issues Etc. fans. Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison, cph.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Healthcare in America.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
As the debate on healthcare continues, we must carefully consider what's at stake. The experience of other countries demonstrates that government mandates and controls do not usually result in improved conditions. Government regulations often crowd out freedom of conscience and do not make allowance for religious beliefs. So far in this debate, there is no clear indication of how a nationalized healthcare system would support the sanctity of human life. As long as that's the case, government-regulated healthcare is a monumental risk that could bring an even greater disregard for life than already exists in America.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.